Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We begin our program, as we do every day, with the latest on health and healing. All the information I'm about to share comes from the National Library of Medicine and from all the peer-reviewed studies that are there. And why do I share this? Because historically, going way back to the beginning of my career, it was always about, well, who should we believe? Well, more often than not, it's the most credentialed person. Well, I didn't have the credentials back then. I graduated from business college, and then I became a registered dietitian, and then a nutritionist. But that didn't compete with an MD or PhD, and I would later get my PhD in postgraduate doctoral work. So I had to rely upon going to the Flower Fifth Avenue Hospital and spending hours per day looking through the scientific peer review literature and selecting studies. So when I would go on to discuss something on television, I would have a folder and I would say, well, according to this study from the British Medical Journal, such and such. And I've done that ever since. And so you're getting high quality information, not some biased information. So let's begin. And we're beginning today with something that almost no one in America eats. Now, back in West Virginia, in the country, people grew rhubarb, and they would eat it. They would boil it, and then they would make a jam out of a rhubarb jam, but it wasn't very common. And for the average person, they probably never even seen rhubarb, but here's why you should pay attention to rhubarb. It cuts cancer cell growth by 50%, according to Emory University. And in fact, what is called the keratin is an orange pigment found in many forms of lichens and also in the tart vegetable rhubarb. And this chemical, the natural phytochemical, and remember, every plant from peanuts to lima beans, from spinach to carrots, they all have hundreds of different phytonutrients. Now, we did not know all these nutrients. They're still being discovered. But the key is, some plants have similar nutrients. For example, if you eat berries, any kind of berry, blueberry, raspberry, strawberry, boysenberry, they would all have certain type of phytonutrients, but then they have their own unique nutrients. For example, not all vegetables are the same. If you eat spinach, it would have different nutrients than if you ate broccoli. And if you ate a carrot, it would be different than if you ate of broccoli, cauliflower, kale, mustard greens, radishes, asparagus, and dandelions. Why? Because they contain a chemical called isothiocyanate. Well, another one also, indole-3-carbinol. Those are specific anti-cancer chemicals. So when we ask you to eat 1 to 2 servings of cruciferous vegetables a day, it's because it's been proven that these chemicals block cancer and help you if you have cancer to kill the cancer, whereas a carrot won't do that. It's good for you, but for different reasons. And that's why you can't just say all vegetables are the same or all fruits are the same. They're not. Every single fruit, like a wild blueberry, is specifically good for your brain. So here we have these kind of orange pigments, and these orange pigments are known to protect you against sun damage. They block ultraviolet light. But then there's a comprehensive study about rhubarb, and it shows that it really does fight cancer by prohibiting the expression of an enzyme vital to cancer's growth. Without that enzyme, the cancer doesn't grow, and it blocks that. And this was done in the lab, and it specifically knocked the leukemia cells in half in just 48 hours. So that's important. Something natural and non-toxic could knock cancer cells. And in another study on lung cancer cells, a major killer in the United States, it had an enormous benefit over an 11-day period by cutting out the cancer, you know, stopping it from growing. So I'm sure that if you haven't had something as simple as this in the past, pick it up, rhubarb. All right? You can get it in almost any store now. Now, there's more. I go through dozens of studies every day, select the ones I think would be applicable. And I'm always looking for ones that will stop something from happening. For example, from Baylor University, there's a nutrient called curcumin. You've heard me mention it many, many times. And cumin, could help combat colitis. Now, a formula that blends curcumin and turmeric oils can prove effective against the activity and inflammatory burden of colitis. And these turmeric oils, they're known as aromatic turmerones. They play a very important role in turning off inflammation in the body. All right? By the way, celery juice turns off inflammation. Lemon juice turns off inflammation. And if you want real superstars, vitamin C and D3 also do the same thing. But curcumin, everyone should have curcumin in their home. Get it in capsule form because it has over 100 different issues in the body that can address, from cancer to inflammation to your heart. All right? Generally speaking, I would use in the neighborhood of 500 to 1,000 milligrams of curcumin per day. Now, from the American Psychological Association, there is a study saying drinking water may help exercising seniors stay mentally sharp. Now, all of us have known that if we don't have enough liquids in our body, and we need, depending upon the cells, about 72% of our body is water. And without it, you don't get the same benefit. For example, you're more likely to have high blood pressure if you're dehydrated. And think of all the athletes that are out there in the summertime working out. That's good for them, but they're not drinking enough. And that's why you should all buy a scale. It's a simple scale. It's about maybe $40. And it measures your body water, your hydration level, your body fat, your body mass index, your muscle mass, and your bone mass, and your overall weight. And you just step on it and gives you all this. So this, I'm not hydrated enough. Because you see, there is a sodium-potassium pump at your cells. And if you have too much sodium, then the sodium-potassium pump don't work so well. Sodium gets in the cell, hence edema, swelling. And if your blood is too thick, if you don't have enough liquid, it begins to thicken. And if you're drinking a lot, especially green juices, that thins the blood, that prevents aggregation or the clumping together of red blood cells, which cause clots, and hence a stroke or heart attack. So drinking water is important, and older people generally don't know that they're dehydrated. There's a mechanism in your brain, and you can develop either hydrodipsy or polydipsy, meaning you have too much water or not enough. And people in nursing homes frequently will die because they don't know that they're thirsty. The brain doesn't work as it used to. So keep yourself hydrated, all right? Now, older people should drink more water to reap the full cognitive benefits of exercise. That's what the new research shows from the American Psychological Society, their annual meeting. And dehydration has been shown to impair exercise performance and brain function in young people. So, just something that simple, all right? Always, before you go out for a workout, have 1 8-ounce glass of coconut water. Because not only are you getting water good, you're also getting potassium, about 500 milligrams, and that's especially good. And from the Karolinska Institute in Sweden, why sunlight deficiency is as deadly as smoking. Yes, a study conducted by Swedish researchers on a population of about 30,000 women assessed the difference in sun exposure as a risk factor for all-cause death. With a prospective 20-year follow-up on the melanoma in southern Sweden cohort study. The women were 25 to 64 at the start of the study, and they were recruited from 1990 to 1992. So then they were measuring their sun exposure constantly. This over a long period of time, 20 years is a long study. And the women with active sun exposure habits were mainly at the lowest risk of cardiovascular disease, and that's important. meaning they didn't die as quickly as others, the less sun, the more likely you are to die and also die of cancers. So just be aware, get as much sun as possible. But when people go to work early and they're commuting and then they're in a building, they're getting artificial light, which is not full spectrum. And then they come home in the wintertime in particular, it gets dark early. So they may not even get a half hour of sun per day. No, you need to get that sun. That's why those of us who live like in Florida and California and Nevada, Texas, etc., they get a lot of sun, Georgia, we have less death because of these preventable factors. So, and our last study today is how a low carbohydrate and low fat diets prolong life. And this is from Peking University in China. So these clinical studies have demonstrated the health benefits of a low carbohydrate diet and low fat diets for weight loss and heart protection. A new study published in the Journal of Internal Medicine looked at the effects of these diets on death in middle-aged and older adults. And it's very simple. If you're on a low-fat diet and a high plant protein diet and high-quality complex carbohydrate, not refined carbohydrate, then you're going to have fewer deaths from all causes, including cardiovascular disease and cancers. By contrast to the average person that consumes a high-fat diet and lots of refined carbohydrates. This was a study that was going off 23 years, right? And involved 165,000 participants. So it was a good study. So go to the healthy plant-based diet and keep the oils to the healthy oils, and you'll have a phenomenal outcome. And one last thing from Tokyo Medical and Dental University, maternal and early life high-fat diets found a result in a taste for salty food. So we're all aware of the importance of eating healthy foods, especially during pregnancy, but a high-fat diet has dramatic consequences on the metabolism. It can lead to obesity, diabetes, chronic liver disease, and possibly cancer. Okay, so that's not good. In most households where children and parents eat the same food, they end up with high-fat diets, lots of sodium, high blood pressure, and heart disease. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you who are listening throughout the world. In fact, I was just looking at the names of people who were signed up for this Sunday's 1 o'clock webinar on how to get off the grid. And I mean, we're every state people are, and out of the country, and a lot of people from Canada who listen. So good for you. You're going to have an extremely insightful, information-packed day, because we're going to take on a lot of issues. And just so you understand, I always start with the problem, because if you don't understand the problem and how it might impact you, how in the world would you care about a solution? Well, that doesn't impact me, Gary. I don't care. You should. For example, what is the most powerful industry in the United States? Think it's banking? No. Military-industrial complex? No. No, this one's making $4 trillion a year and provides, outside of emergency medicine, very little that benefits us. It actually causes disease and death at an alarming rate, yet nothing is done to reform it, and that is medicine. So I want to talk on Sunday about 10 different areas of our life that need to be examined honestly, without political or ideological or cultural or ethnic or religious inferences, just pure facts. And then ask, okay, you thought you weren't impacted. Guess you are. And so I'm going to start with that, and Richard Gale's going to do that, and then we're going to go into the positive news. So the first is, what are the problems that we have to face? Are we facing them now? Have we faced them? Have we done anything? The answer is no, not to a single major problem that we face. I could list right now, and we did last night, I listed over 117 major problems. Not one of them has been addressed. Not taking the money out of elections, not universal health care, not reinstating the Glass-Steagall Act, how to nullify all option trading and all derivative trading in all banks. Therefore, it takes away a major problem if a bank starts faltering, and banks are faltering. I'm going to play a clip in a few moments on that. So we have to come to grips with the fact that we have to stop distracting ourselves long enough to examine our life in context to everything else that's occurring around us. Now, depending upon your social status, how much money you have, your access to different options, because there's some people, they don't care. They're rich enough, they can get in a jet and they go to New Zealand, they'll go to some other country. They can afford that. You and I can't. So we have to do what our parents did back in the Great Depression. Learn how to repurpose our lives, our skills, to survive that. And right now, we do just the opposite. Anything that offends us or causes us to be, I don't like math. Okay, math, no longer in college, university, no longer have to be concerned. But math is just racist, isn't it? Of course it is. But let's stop all math, and thank goodness, you know, we've had math, but do we need math? No, we don't need math. It makes me feel angry to have math. Okay. Do you feel angry when you cross a bridge in a car? Do you feel angry when you go up in an airplane, when you drive a car? Do you feel angry when you turn on the air conditioner or the heater? You have to be a functional idiot. I mean a functional idiot to say that math is racist and doesn't count, because math is how you live your life. Without it, you'd be living a primordial existence, much like Neanderthals. Well, a lot of people act like Neanderthals now, and some look like Neanderthals, so it's not a far reach. But of course, we've got to get past all this craziness we're in right now. We're in a very dark place. I mean, a really dark place, and it's going to get darker. So if you're smart, you'll want to know, well, how can I turn on the lights in my own life? I counseled someone this morning concerning, how have you lived your life? Either exploring, experimenting, looking to see what's real, or as a passive spectator. And the person had to acknowledge they live like a passive spectator, playing it safe. Okay, when you play it safe and your body politic and your corporate interests are corrupt, it's only a matter of time before you end up in a 15-minute or 5-minute city, chipped, and now they have, by the way, they never announce a technology that they haven't already perfected. Don't let them make you believe, oh, in the future, at some time, maybe not in your lifetime, we're going to have a machine that reads your brains. It's here now. Everything they talk about, they're talking about it to see what your response is. But it's here. Let me show you where this goes. Do you remember recently Matt Taibbi came on board and talked about what he found when he started looking through the actual Twitter files of people who worked at Twitter and corporate America and every governmental agency, all controlling everything, who was censored and who was praised? Well, what if you use Twitter for your information? What if you use Wikipedia? And Wikipedia, we're exposing Wikipedia. I've already written 74 articles on Wikipedia. Not one has been refuted as inaccurate. And I send every one to the chief legal counsel at Wikipedia. And they demanded I stop sending them. And I said, no, I'm going to keep sending them. You don't have to open them. You don't have to read them. You can throw them in garbage. But I want you to know what kind of company you're associated with. Anyhow, so know when to walk away from something. Walk away from Wikipedia. Walk away from Twitter. Walk away from credit cards. Walk away from the banks. Here is what Matt Taibbi had to say about what he discovered. And I'll bet you didn't know this. Now you will. Let's go to the clip, please.
Twitter files drop.
The first thing is about this thing called Project Osprey. We found a document that pertains to Twitter's early self-examination about how many accounts they had linked to the Internet Research Agency in Russia. And there's a couple interesting things in there, but the most interesting thing we found was that they had two different algorithmic lists of Russians. They were called a priori Russians and inferred Russians. And on the list of inferred Russians was Jill Stein, and she was on this list called is_Russian, and as was WikiLeaks. This is kind of a really good window into how algorithmic censorship works. They create a bunch of rules, and they can be completely ridiculous. Once you set them out into the wild, it can capture all sorts of people who don't really belong there, and then they'll be de-amplified or, you know, visibility filtered or whatever it is. For people who are trying to evade surveillance, these, you know, really important civil liberties tools, that can drop you in a bucket that calls you Russian. You know, maybe that's not exactly what happened with WikiLeaks, but that can happen. Both of those things are interesting, and it's another example of there's lots of stuff in the Twitter files that if the quote unquote left cared, you know, there's this stuff pertaining to that there. But yeah, they don't particularly. I remember when Putin shut down the National Democratic Institute and the International Republican Institute in Russia, you know, basically using similar theories that these groups had been proxies for funneling money to opposition movements and in Russia, and therefore they were not legitimate organizations and needed to be shut down. And, you know, there was obviously an outcry after that happened. Why is it not hypocritical for us to look at it that way? I mean,
okay. Jill Stein, running for president, board certified surgeon, Harvard professor, had a very humanistic platform, would have made a much better president than anyone running against her. And yet there she's now listed on Twitter and by official proclamation, a communist? No. A Russian asset? No, not at all. And by the way, they're going to do everything they can with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to try to destroy his reputation. Believe nothing, I mean nothing, that is coming out of the establishment on this topic, all right? Because it is going to be lies. And what I've decided to do, of my own prerogative, every major challenge to him, I'm going to do what I normally do, which is an in-depth, scholarly, original, objective investigative report and broadcast and publish the results. And just to see which side of the truth is the establishment on. Because up to this point, for years, not once has the establishment been honest or truth, and not once has your life been improved. Rich people, powerful people, all their lives are substantially improved. After all, they have all the money on their side. But you don't. All right? Just want to suggest that to you. Now, one of the things that historically we really benefited from was the dialogue that was occurring within the feminist movement. I knew many feminists. I was not only professionally associated, I had close personal friends like Barbara Seaman for years. And Barbara was one of the leaders. She was one of the three most important feminists for almost 40 years. We traveled on tours to Chicago and Los Angeles and New York City to do specials, Call for Women Only. We wrote a book together, and it was 1,600 pages. And she was one of those who encouraged the spiritual feminists, because I remember getting up at several meetings where there were very few men, and there was a whole segment of the feminist movement that just hated men. Men were the cause of all problems. And I asked, where are the spiritual feminists? And I listed about 100 spiritual feminists. Jean Houston is just one of the most important spiritual feminists in American history. And there was silence, as if there's only... You could only be a feminist if you were highly radicalized and political. And I don't see people coming together fighting and causing peace. You bring peace to the table if you want peace as an outcome. Look around the world. Where do you see us sending diplomats or those who are involved in peaceful resolution to acknowledge our wrongs, whether it's colonization or slavery, or manipulation of resources, or regime change. And by the way, just regime change alone, and the wars we've contracted to do since 1945 have killed over 20 million people worldwide. and over 59 countries minimally have been adversely affected. So you would think that someone in the media would take that up and say, we don't really have a democracy. We have a hegemonic program, and we're not helping anyone except those in power. That's happening now in the United States to our own citizens. And I share that with you because what we need today, in my opinion, is we need a rebirth of a new type of spiritual feminism, one that tells the truth that the battle is not a battle of the sexes. It's a battle of those who control both sexes and have historically. I can show you historical references. I can take you back almost 500 years of how many hundreds of millions of men and some women and an awful lot of innocent civilians died because of someone in power who used that power and then blamed everyone else but themselves. So today, we need to join forces. We need to stop these internecine and ideological conflicts. We need to work together. And as long as you can do that, you have to do that by getting off their grid, no longer believing those in power. Because look at the politicians. The people in power, they don't care about us. They only care about themselves. I'm going to give you a clip now. Listen to this clip. You can agree or disagree with any part of this. And that's one of the reasons I play a variety of programs. And I'll tell you, if you find something of interest in it, something of value, use it. If not, then we'll see another clip might do that for you. So here we have Camille Paglia, a professor, a university professor. And from the very beginning, she was extremely outspoken about how much politics, how much self-serving and self-interest, how much career advancement, some, by no means all or the majority of feminists, but these were the feminists who were the top alphas. They were going for their own careers and using the movements, according to her, to help themselves. Well, think if we unified the women's movement. What if we honored being a woman, a unique and dynamic and special and a wonderful human being, without first labeling it, dicing, cutting it? So now we want to take the word woman out of our vocabulary, we want to erase it. Man, woman, brother, sister, father, mother, lover. We want to remove all those and just a uterus that bleeds, or man is a testicles producing, with the testicles producing sperm. That's what we relegated to now? Who says? Say no to that nonsense. But if you're all divided, you're not going to find unity in a common voice. Well, now look at the parents who found out what was actually being taught, and they're speaking out, and there's a lot of them. The silent majority must find its voice within the next 12 to 24 months, or conditions in the country will de-evolve so much that you'll be living in a completely altered, crisis-ridden environment. Here's what she has to say. Are just going backwards.
Camille Paglia.
The universities are an absolute wreck. Right now, they're pygmies. I'm telling you, they are passive worms. You, as a man, you cannot possibly know what I'm talking about, because you can tell.
In a time when more and more students on college campuses are demanding political correctness from those around them, how have faculty responded? Reason TV's editor-in-chief Nick Gillespie sat down with college professor, author, and social critic Camille Paglia at Reason Weekend to talk about that, as well as feminism, Prince's career, Beyonce's Lemonade album, and more.
Let's get started here. Part of what we're talking about this weekend at Reason is kind of the state of the university, and, what is the university over as a meaningful place, as a site of new cultural production and knowledge. And we're going to be talking, about students and the way students are controlled. But can you talk a little bit, how do you feel about the state of the university from the professor's point of view? Are professors, particularly in the arts and the humanities and the social sciences, are they bringing what they should be bringing to research universities?
The universities are an absolute wreck, right now, because for decades, any graduate student in the humanities who had independent thinking, it was driven out. Okay, there was no way to survive without memorizing all of these stupid bromides with this reverential bowing to these overinflated figures like Lacan, Derrida, Foucault, and so on. And basically, it's been a tyranny in the humanities because the professors who are now of my age, who are the baby boom professors, who made their careers on the back of Foucault and so on, are determined that survive. And so you have a kind of vampirism going on. But I've been getting letters for, you know, for 25 years since Sexual Personae was released in 1990, from refugees from the graduate schools. Okay, so it's been a terrible loss. One of my favorite letters was early on. A woman wrote to me who she was painting houses in St. Louis, and she said that she had wanted a career as a literature professor and had gone into a graduate program in comparative literature at Berkeley. And finally, she was forced to drop out because she said every time she would express enthusiasm for a work they were studying in the seminar, everyone would look at her as if she had in some way created a terrible error of taste. I thought, oh my God, okay. That's what's been going on, is that a certain sort of a pretentious style of superiority to the text, and every text, of course, is supposed to be dissolving itself. Okay? So it's all self-reflexive. At the end, nothing means anything, and the professors believe that they have some, that this is an accomplishment to reduce great works of art to nothing. Graduate training has been systematically removing from the grad students the one thing you need as a teacher in the undergraduate classroom: enthusiasm, passion, conviction. Okay? An independent point of view.
So one of the things she mentioned, letters, I highly recommend, if you don't, read her, I guess it's weekly column at Salon, where Camilla's been an advice columnist for 20 years or so.
It began and a spy magazine.
Along with, I think, Andrew W.K., who is a musician and motivational speaker in The Village Voice. These are the two great advice columnists, like Forget Ann Landers, Forget Dear Abby, and the range of topics that you cover, and it's really a fantastic thing.
When Spy magazine announced my debut and Agony Aunt column, Ask Camille, yeah, it was on the same cover that they had the great Hillary Clinton dominatrix cover. Okay, so it's fantastic. There's Hillary Clinton in the White House, the Oval Office desk in a dominatrix outfit, and then around there's a band. And Camille Paglia debut, Agony Anagram.
So what needs to change?
We've been joined to the hip.
Or what can change in the university to bring that back in?
Because rebellion by the grad students. This is what I'm trying to foment. Mm-hmm. Okay, we absolutely need someone to stand up, okay, and start criticizing authority figures. But no, okay, this generation of young people have been trained throughout middle school and high school and college, okay, to be subservient to authority. There is no question of authority or whatever. They want an expansion of authority. Everything of my generation stood against. Okay, we drove the administrators out of our private lives, out of the in loco parentis mode. And now today's kids have been raised in a helicopter parent fashion. They feel warm and cozy. Okay, by additional expansion of authority of these Budinsky. Okay, people. I mean, these mediocrities who like the bureaucrats who infest university. University life has become increasingly unpalatable because of this, thanks to federal regulations, forcing the adding on of more layers of bureaucracy. It's a nightmare, an outrage, and none of the faculty have fought back. Now, they pretend to be leftists, okay? Now, they're pygmies. Okay, I'm telling you, they are passive worms, okay? Not to fight back against the bureaucrats.
So talk a bit about, in the 60s, I mean, there's that great moment in Berkeley with the free speech movement, which started when students, and I guess it was a grad student, stood up and protested at Berkeley in the 60s, unless you were an official member of the Democratic or Republican students groups, you couldn't leaflet. And that's what the free speech movement was actually about just handing out all sorts of literature. Where do you see, is there going to be that, who is going to be, the university's tank man in Tiananmen Square carrying his shopping bags and standing up?
Well, I mean, there has to be a rollback. The faculty has been absolutely servient, okay, to this mad overgrowth of authority. I mean, I wrote a piece in 1992 called The Nursery School Campus that was very prophetic. Okay, it was in the Times Literary Supplement in England. And they queried me when the article was in press, and they said, what is this dean of students thing that you refer to? I said, you don't have a dean of students? They said, no. I said, what do you have? It turns out, okay, at Oxford and Cambridge, okay, there was practically no administrative bureaucracy of any kind. He said, oh, we do have the man who runs the cafeteria, okay, et cetera. So the provosts and the, you know, and the heads of everything are like drawn from the faculty, and then when they're done with that position, they go back to the faculty. So what's happened, which is extremely, you know, pernicious and toxic in American universities over the last 35 to 40 years, okay, is this growth of a massive administrator class who had never had any teaching experience whatever, and regard themselves as a master race, and I am not kidding, okay? All right? And they force you into every kind, there's all kinds of formulas you have to follow, you know, to deal with the students and every kind of regulation and law, okay? And they're a bunch of nervous Nellies, et cetera, okay? It's an outrage. And how, there is no
copy.
The faculty has been reduced, okay, to slave status. They're serfs. And from coast to coast here, it's an absolute outrage. And again, you know, all these people pretending, like Judith
Gary,
Butler, these people pretending to be leftists, okay? And then being paid, you know, $500,000 or whatever the yearly salaries, and having with their you know, armies of editorial assistants and people running. The corruption has been untouched by the major media. Why? Because all these graduates of the elite schools go and get jobs at the New York Times. Okay, that's why.
Talk, so there's definitely that bureaucratic encroachment on all sorts of university life.
Tremendous.
Talk, you know, you mentioned Foucault, Derrida, Lacan, and it's interesting, Jacques Lacan is a French psychoanalyst who actually was the hero of a 1978 Reason cover story called Francis
hey, Gary,
New
yeah, five
Anti-Statist
more minutes of this
Philosophy. I did not discover that when I was in grad school. I would have made all the Lacanians at SUNY Buffalo cry themselves to sleep to know that Reason had something good about him. But what is, and these are very different guys with different ideas, but what is the kind of
the one with Clayton Morris, right?
Message or
yep,
idea that they were giving that has made, do you think that has led to a conformity of thought among professors?
Well, the number one error of Lacan, Derrida, Foucault, and so on, okay, is that language structures everything. There is no reality. There is, knowledge is not possible, okay, without language. And I'm thinking, all these decades of crap pouring out of these elite schools based on this stupid idea. I've been teaching in art schools, okay, my entire career. Excuse me, my dancers are totally inarticulate. Okay? That's not how they perceive the world. Okay, they express it. They process the world through the body.
Maybe they just didn't have the right English teacher.
No. That is not how my ceramicists do not process the world. Anyone who works with their hands is not processing reality through language. Okay, this is all based on an outmoded linguistics of Saussure. Okay, it's absolute nonsense. Okay, right from the start, there are different parts of the brain. These people, they're first of all all scientific illiterates, okay, which is why there's no biology, okay, as a required element in women's studies. Which wouldn't you think when you're putting together a women's studies program that the first thing would be that any graduate of that program would need to have one course maybe in biology to study endocrinology and hormones? No, okay, and so on. It's all language. It's all language, and that's why gender is nothing but language. You see, okay, right? We're entering this transgender nightmare. Okay, all we hear is transgender, because they honestly believe that gender is not grounded in the body. They have absolutely no scientific knowledge. Okay, these people in the humanity.
That leads to my next question. This is a group that.
It's a part of a longer conversation, but we need voices that challenge the establishment. And Paglia challenges it and has her entire career. I've interviewed her, and she's a good interview because she doesn't hold back. She doesn't go for the correct answer, the political answer. She doesn't deal in euphemisms. She deals in grounded reality. And that's why she's so popular as a teacher. The trouble is that today the administrators control the entire educational system. And as she said, these are not people who are highly educated. These are people who are not grounded in the reality of what it is to be a young person at different stages of life, evolving and having all these different inputs. Just imagine today is what a teacher has to compete with. When you and I were going to school, back whenever it was, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you knew your teachers. More often than not, you respected your teachers. Your teachers tried to get to know who you were, a little of your background, so that they knew the context in which to teach you. If your parent says, Gary's a person that kind of goes off in this place where he goes with his mind, sometimes he'll be distracted looking out the window. Okay, then I was given some different type of input to, what are you thinking about? Well, I'm looking for solutions to problems. you're only 7 years old. I know. I'm just, you know, I'm a kid thinking about solutions to problems. And I had 114 inventions before I was 12 years old, but that was beside the point. The point was my teachers didn't limit me. Today, I absolutely guarantee you that myself and a lot of other creative people would be diagnosed with ADD, ADHD, and put on medications to calm those emotional urges. Now imagine if you're a kid that's got all the most interesting things on the outside of the classroom to engage you and none of it on the inside. Or what if you have a good teacher but a boring teacher? What if you have a boring teacher who's also not a good teacher? The world inside of a classroom cannot compete with the world outside. The world in most offices cannot compete with the world outside that office. And yet today, there's supposed to be conformity about everything. And when they want us to conform, they want us in a 15-minute city, and they've got these going all over the world. They want us chipped. They want to have a central currency. They want to control our food production. They want everything under their control. And yet none of these people were elected. Just by the mere fact of their own arrogance and their capacity to manipulate, they've gotten in power. You and I haven't been invited to Davos to offer challenges. You and I haven't been invited to the Council on Foreign Relations to offer a challenge to how they go about deciding which war is the good war. We aren't on the Nobel Committee to give a Nobel Peace Prize. Think of Henry Kissinger on that one, to Barack Obama, who started seven wars, caused hundreds of thousands of Americans to die and millions of others to be displaced or die. We would say no, but as long as you surround yourself with yes, then everything is just in this kind of pixie dust ethereal existence, whether it's rap music or whether it's Hollywood. You and I aren't asked to walk a red carpet, but this past weekend, all of these hotty-totties who want to be something spent thousands and thousands of dollars per outfit, flew in a private jet, and then had your entourage so you could walk onto a red carpet and everybody goes, ooh, ah. And this is just stupidity. This is decadency at a level we haven't seen. Anyhow, one of the people who was coming in as others were retiring or slowing down was Naomi Wolf. She's a smart person, graduated from Yale, top of her class, Rhodes Scholar at Oxford University, got her doctorate, and she had a very successful career until she made a mistake. And it was a big mistake. In fact, it was a life-changing mistake. She had no controversy whatsoever. She could write her own ticket. She was the leading feminist for the last 20 years. There were others, but she got all the spotlight. She took all the air out of the room when she entered. But then she decided to look deeper, since her specialty was women's health issues. And when she began to look at the actual scientific data from the vaccine manufacturers, she found out they had lied about everything. And the incidence of stillbirth and death and dysmenorrhea and amenorrhea and all these problems with the person's menses, all that had been covered up. And women were dying young at heart attacks, myocarditis, and athletes, both male and female, at an 1,800% increase in just 1 year. And yet not a single movement, no women's movement, spoke up on behalf of the women who then said, whoa, I've been a victim. I was completely healthy until I took the vaccines, and Dr. Walensky, she's a woman, and all these other women in positions of power told me to take it. Rachel Maddow, she was not just powerful, she was completely dynamic in saying, take the vaccines, you will not infect other people, you will not get infected, you will not go to the hospital, you won't die. All of that was incorrect. So how many people's injuries, hospitalizations, and death are because of the advice given by her and every other person in the media? So when all this happened, Naomi Wolf began to say, well, where are the women's movements? Why aren't you protecting these women? Think of the 130 million American, and most of those are women, who have autoimmune conditions. They shouldn't get vaccinated. Any doctor who suggests otherwise should lose their license because it's unscientific. Let them get naturally infected, have a proper protocol, and they'll go overcome it. Now they got at least 16 years of of protection in your immune system. Vaccines don't give you more than a couple months and all these side effects. So she began to speak out. She was warned, then threatened, and then attacked. So now, feel how it is to be the person that is, everybody wants you in their program, the lecture, etc. And then suddenly, everyone in the feminist movement is attacking you. Let's hear what she has to say in her own words.
Yeah, but I mean, Gary, I'm so cynical about feminism right now. I don't even think we need a new feminist movement because, you know, I said last night at our book party, it's 1776. Every one of our institutions has revealed itself to be completely corrupted, including feminism. And we have to start over. We have to rebuild from the bottom up uncorrupted institutions. Feminists have been the greatest compromised group, along with obstetricians and gynecologists, of any group in this sad, disgusting debacle. You know, as more and more evidence is emerging that women are being targeted in, you know, their uteruses are being targeted, their reproductive capacity, which is supposed to be the centerpiece of what feminists care about, you know, my body, my choice, that's being targeted. You know, they've been silent. You know, where is Gloria Steinem, whom I adore, silent? Where is the Boston Women's Health Collective, the people who wrote Our Bodies, Ourselves? You know, where are they? Where are all the... I almost cried when I was interviewing Ellen Jasmer because it's a year and a half after I sounded the first alarm about reproductive damage to women, and she is the first feminist women's healthcare practitioner who has come forward to talk about what's happening to women, what she sees. And these placentas she sees, every damn obstetrician and gynecologist and midwife in America and Western Europe is seeing similar ones if we're getting reports from four independent sources as we are, right? So this is a tipping point, and all of these people are silent. All of these people are silent, and many of them took the money and remained silent as a result, and they are all complicit in a mass murder situation. So, you know, we're not going to – it's bigger than, you know, let's have more humane feminists. They've ruined themselves. They have no credibility. I wouldn't trust them with my – you know, I wouldn't trust them with anyone's health, of anyone I love. They are thoroughly treacherous, and that's true of every doctor, every nurse, every midwife, you know, who has stood by or facilitated this debacle. You know, right now, we had this event for the volunteers. Right now in this group Airbnb where I'm staying in Alexandria, there's a pharmacist named Erica. I won't give her last name without her permission. But she literally has lost everything. She's lost her house. She's had to sell her house because, you know, her primary asset, because she can't afford to live in it anymore, because she refused to take the injection and to participate in forcing it on other people without informed consent. She's lost everything. And she's there, you know, helping the volunteers get the truth to people every single day for no money at all, because that's the way decent human beings are supposed to behave. They're not supposed to participate in poisoning and murdering their fellow human beings. So, you know, she did it. She's facing horrible consequences. So I have no patience for people who, you know, colluded, and that includes the entire feminist establishment. Where's now? Where's NARAL as women are unable to give birth, which is at least as important as the ability to have an abortion? I'm starting to feel it's more important.
Okay. So you can agree or disagree with her, but remember, she was the top, most respected and sought after feminist for the last 20 years, and she was a feminist in league with other top feminists for the previous 15 years. She's 35 years, and now she's turned her back on all of it because they've turned her back on women, according to her. Just saying. Now, I'm going to play one more clip. This clip is from the Clayton Morris, and it's from Redacted. It's short, but remember I told you we have at least 200 banks that are going insolvent, and sooner or later, these all either have to be closed down or absorbed into other larger banks, but we've had 5 large banks have to be closed down or be absorbed into other banks, but the trouble is these other banks are not solvent. I've done the research on this. They all have at least $100 trillion, the five leading banks, in derivatives. If one of those banks fall like dominoes, they'll all fall. And yet not a single thing is being done to cash out on their derivative positions and close up those windows. Let's listen to what they have to say.
Half of America's banks are potentially insolvent, according to a new report from Stanford School of Business. You may not want to hear this on a day when small bank stocks are circling the drain. And the writing has been on the wall, though, since March when the first bank collapsed. It was Silicon Valley Bank, and it started this domino chain. Now, here's the Wall Street Journal explain how and why this seems to be getting worse and not better. It says bankers and government officials had hoped that First Republic Bank's seizure and sale to J.P. Morgan Chase would mark the end of the banking panic that started with the March run on Silicon Valley Bank. And here's a quote from Jamie Dimon, and he's going to really wish he didn't say that. He says, "This part of the crisis is over." This was on Monday when all of First Republic Bank's assets were just magically transferred into his bank. And I'm sure that sounded good and it felt really good to him. So he felt confident to tell us all that crisis part is over. And those were what we call in the business famous last words, because today things were getting worse. Now, I'm just going to summarize a little bit from this story. Here's a Stanford story saying that monetary tightening and U.S. bank fragility, and basically they're making the point that there is a lot of it. They're saying that of the around 4,300 banks in the U.S., at least half, close to 2,300, are insolvent or right on the verge. Here's how they think that risk, this is like, it's not funny, but it's funny. Here's how they think that risk is distributed across the country. It's everywhere. That's worse than a COVID map.
Well, so Wyoming is okay.
Why make a map? Why make a map or a diagram if it's like, make a pie chart if 100% of something is in it? You know, like, why bother?
Parts of, I see Lake Michigan is, or was it Lake Superior is okay. So if you live on Lake Superior, you're fine. Or parts of New Mexico or parts of Idaho.
It looks like Western Texas, possibly. Or, you know, if I don't know. You really have to zoom in. Like, some places are okay.
You have to go up to Havre, Montana, or like Whitefish. Yeah.
So, yes, they're saying that half of America's 4,800, that's the number I was looking for, banks are already burning through their capital buffers. And they may not have to mark all losses to market under U.S. accounting rules, but that does not make them solvent, according to the report. So they're doing what Al Gore would call fuzzy math. And, you know, by doing so, they can make it look on their balance sheet that's good on paper, but it's not so good. You know, Stanford economists are saying somebody will take these losses. And we have been saying this all along that, you know, bad financial decisions have a trickle down effect and they affect us all. We saw what happened when the government spent like drunken sailors during the pandemic. And now we're dealing with high.
Because you don't know what the major people are doing who have control over your retirement funds, the equity partnerships, BlackRock, Vanguard. You have no idea. And they're positioning themselves because they're having to face the dollar losing its supremacy as the only reserve currency, because within the next 12 months maximum, I believe that we will see the change in the power of the dollar to a mixed currency where the dollar and its currencies, the euro, the yen, the pound, the Swiss franc, and the Canadian dollar, are one currency group, but by a year from now, probably in the neighborhood of 70%, I repeat, 70% or higher of the world's population will live in a mixed currency where the BRICS nations will have. Right now, there's 20 knocking on the door immediately, including big players, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Argentina, they're all coming in. So they're going to both dwarf the United States in manufacturing and dwarf the United States in gross domestic product. And that overnight is going to cause a crash in the dollar. How far down, I don't know. But real estate, anything pegged to the dollar, real estate, you're going to be underwater in your mortgages. So all I can do is say a tsunami's coming, pay attention, do your homework. Don't rely upon me. I'm just the person. It's not, I'm not giving a clarion call. I'm simply saying, we don't have just a dead canary in the coal mine. We have a million dead canaries in the coal mine. And pay attention, please. Now, I've got a special for you today. And this is a really good one. It's Heavenly Aloe, but also the documentary Rescue and Hope, which is two DVDs. It's 4 hours long. And it's the best people in America, if not the world, on helping yourself if you've been vaccinated with no side effects, if you've been vaccinated with side effects, if you've had spike proteins causing all kinds of disabilities, if you've had long COVID, if you weren't vaccinated and you had natural immunity, or if you're not vaccinated and you had long COVID, all of those conditions are covered by clinicians who have worked with their own patients and helped them. And there's good science to back all this up. So this special, Food, Mood, Body Connection, a book that I wrote, Food, Mood Connection, Rescue and Hope, a two documentary set, and Heavenly Aloe, it's yours for only $59.95. It's normally $137. You're getting 56% discount. And all this is valuable, especially that Rescue and Hope. Wow. And the Food Mood Connection is going to help a lot of people who didn't understand that what they were drinking or eating was directly impacting their mood, their serotonin, dopamine levels, pains, and aches in the body, environmental illnesses, all the stuff that is not taught in school and should be is in that book. I even did a special for PBS stations on that very topic. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065 to get this special. And by the way, just to let you know, to create this, because I thought that we were being conned, this goes way back in the 1970s, because all these beautiful labels, and I'm wondering, are they really growing the aloe vera? So I went out to Arizona, I went to several places. No, they weren't. They were importing it from Costa Rica. So some buddies and I, my brother Steve and Howard, we went down to Costa Rica. We then got a person that drove us up into the mountains. It looked like a moonscape. And there we entered the largest aloe growing place in Costa Rica, if not one of the largest in the world. And they had a what looked like an old airplane hangar with a dirt floor and a guy sitting there with a 55-gallon barrel. And they would bring in the aloe. They wouldn't be washed. They'd just be filleted like fish. And one of the most nutritious part, which is the skin and the nutrients under the skin, would be thrown away, and the gel would be thrown into this tub, and then chemicals would be put into the chemical to preserve it, and then be shipped off. My goodness, there was no hygiene. There was no quality. I saw them putting old aloe vera and under immature aloe in there, and because we told them, well, we're interested in aloe. They thought we were going to buy it, and I took photographs. I did a story on this for Caveat Emptor. So then I decided I want to do something different. I want 100% organic, grown in the United States, down in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, hand-cut at 3 years of age, only the outer leaves, pressed right there in a factory under rabbinical supervision. So you're getting the best of the best, fresh, organic, at the highest amount of mucopolysaccharides, the healing ingredients. And I put in there the best type of aloe. There are many different types, but this is called Barbadentis. And then with that, I added in Bing cherries, raspberries, and black cherry flavors, Siberian Panax ginseng, gota cola, wild yam, ginger, peppermint, and it's just as good as it can be, and it's certified organically grown. So you're getting the best of the best aloe I know of in the world. All right, plus you're getting the most comprehensive protocols to help you with everything related to COVID. All right? It doesn't get better than that. So give a call now. Call the number. The number again is 877-627-5065. Same number if you want to come on Sunday to the webinar. Now, normally you would be hearing Eutrice Lee, but Eutrice is late getting back into the studio because she was out getting physical therapy, and also she's getting her blood drawn at OverQuest Labs so that she can see she has her beginning blood that she brought with her. Then she has her blood that she took, after a month, and now she's got her finishing blood. And I think we're going to see a huge difference in all of her immune markers. So she's not here. So I'm going to continue on right into her space and for a little bit, and then I'm going to play a clip that's just her talking and telling her story. She was on the air yesterday for about 12 minutes, and I had to keep it tight where it was yes and no. Now I'm not in it at all. She's telling the story. But keep in mind what you're about to hear when we go to her in about 16 minutes, 15 minutes. I suggested she get a hold of, she handed me her medical records. I didn't even know she was sick. And these were all deadly diseases. She would have died. She wouldn't be alive today. And the trouble is, everywhere that we called and every physical center I went into, they didn't have, and she didn't have insurance that would cover it, and or they had a long waiting list. She would never have survived. So then she said, what am I going to do? I said, well, let's just start with lifestyle and behavior modification. That's all you can do. You got to live each day. So this is non-medical. It's non-treatment. It's just helping rebalance the body, cleansing and detoxifying. But the results were phenomenal. And she mentioned them yesterday. And she has the x-rays and medical records, four sets, going clear back to our oncologist at a cancer hospital. She chose not to have surgery, radiation, chemotherapy. And yet she's free of all disease. Eight killing diseases, tachycardia, acute kidney failures in both kidneys. Stage 4 cancer is what she said she was told by the leading oncologist. And she had high uncontrolled hypertension, uncontrolled diabetes, and morbid obesity. She's lost, as of this morning, 77 pounds. Wow. So she's helping herself. So that was yesterday. So now we're going to start off today by saying that if you'd like to call in and ask any questions, I'm happy to address those questions. The talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. But I'm going to play a clip. I think you'll find this clip of interest. We're going to play a little bit of it, and then we're going to come back and discuss it. Let's go to the clip, please.
You're hanging with no good news, so here's something positive that happened.
What disturbs the shit out of me is that after I got better, CNN, MSNBC, all these mainstream news things are mocking me for taking horse medication. They're saying, he took horse medication. He took horse dewormer. Like, literally taking a drug that's on the World Health Organization's list of essential medicines. Literally taking a drug that's been prescribed billions of times. Taking a drug from that was invented by the guy who won the Nobel Prize for inventing that drug. Has one of the best safety profiles of any known drug, but it's generic and it's cheap. It was real cheap. And I didn't just take that. I listed a bunch of other things I took. Z-Pack, monoclonal antibodies. I had IV vitamin infusions multiple days in a row. I got better quick. Nobody cared that I got better quick. All they cared was I didn't get vaccinated. What's the best way to shame him? Let's point to this one thing that he took and mock this person for taking this foolish medication. They even changed the color of my face on CNN. I put a video up of me saying that I had to cancel shows. Dave Chappelle and I had a big concert coming up that weekend, and I said, we have to postpone it because I have COVID. But in the video, I was like, I feel fine. I had COVID 3 days ago. I had one bad day. The second day I felt pretty good. Today I feel great. And all they wanted to talk about, like constantly, every hour, was me taking horse dewormer. It was in Rolling Stone. It was in all these things. Rolling Stone had an article. Gunshot victims are waiting in line to get to the hospital because so many people are overdosing from horse dewormer. 100% horseshit. Printed in the Rolling Stone. Not only that, but they used an image. This is Oklahoma. They used an image. This is supposedly in the summer that this was happening. They used an image of a bunch of people waiting in line wearing winter coats. Because that wasn't from that. That was from, I believe they were waiting in line to get vaccinated for the flu. It was another stock photograph that they used of people waiting in line at the hospital. It had nothing to do with horse dewormer. This was tweeted by Rachel Maddow. This was tweeted by many online prominent influencers and journalists. Like, look at these fools taking this horse dewormer. And it wasn't until I read Robert Kennedy's book, The Real Anthony Fauci, that I got a sense that this is a playbook that they have used forever. They offer one solution. This one solution is patented. This one solution is controlled by these pharmaceutical companies, and it's very expensive, and they make a fuckload of money from it. Whereas anything that's off-label, anything that's generic, is dismissed. They rig the test to make it look like it, like they'll give you far more, in like what they did with hydroxychloroquine. I mean, I don't even want to go into this. You could read it in the book. But my whole journey on this is like, first of all, how did I find myself in this, right? I'm a comedian and a cage-fighting commentator. How am I having these how am I on CNN all the time? And all they're doing is mocking a medication that I took very deceptively. No, out and out lying, not just deceptively, just out and out lying, saying that I took veterinary medicine. It was so strange. It was so strange to be in the center of that. And also to be someone who got over it very quickly, where there was no discussion. There was no like, hey, Joe Rogan got over this really quickly. What is he doing differently than most people that had COVID and had terrible outcomes? There was none of that. There was no real concern. Like, hey, is he doing something that we could all do? Maybe some people like Aaron Rodgers, who is allergic to one of the key components of the mRNA vaccine. He literally is allergic to it. If he takes it, it could be bad for him. So isn't there something those people can do? There wasn't even that. It was just mockery and shame. And it was also a very distorted understanding of the actual landscape. They thought they were CNN, and CNN was huge. CNN is the news. CNN is a gigantic corporation. They have a big building, the whole deal, giant sign.
30 seconds.
They didn't understand that this podcast is 10 times larger than them. And it was exposed during that whole thing where they just made this terrible chess move. They just ran out in the middle with their king. And that's how I found myself in the middle of all this.
888-874-4888. Let me show you how we have to become aware. Aware of good people living decent lives. And what do most of us want? We want to surround ourselves throughout our life through the different transitions of life with people we enjoy being with, people we love, people who have our backs, we have theirs. They accept us for flaws and all, because all of us are flawed to different degrees. We want to have some sense of security. We don't want to be thinking that, wow, what happens if I'm out on the street? No money, no food, because we see it happening. And we don't see anything really being done to help all these people who are homeless. And we see institutions that used to hide all their motives. Now they're not hiding anything. They don't have to. They control the media. They control the government, most of it. They control most politicians, not all, and their corporate interest. And so they know that we're addicted to our comfort. We're addicted to our insecurity. So we're not going to go very far from home each day. We're not going to challenge authority because we've been told authority knows best. Who are you? You're not an authority. And as a result, people live a very passive existence. Now it's time that we stop. I ask people to walk away from Wikipedia, but don't take my word for it. This is just today. There have been three scandals just this week involving Wikipedia. This is just the latest. This is from Matt Novak from Forbes, mainstream publication. Quote, Wikipedia editor says they were paid to change Vivek Ramaswamy's page. Quote, Vivek Ramaswamy, an entrepreneur vying to be the Republican candidate for president in 2024, allegedly paid to change the Wikipedia page about him, according to a disclosure made on the Community Encyclopedia. The changes including scrubbing the fact that he received the Paul and Daisy Soros Fellowship for New Americans in 2011, and that his role in the Ohio COVID-19 response team. Anyone can make changes to Wikipedia articles, but it's against the rules for anyone to edit an article about themselves. It's within the rules to pay someone else to make changes on Wikipedia on the articles as long as those payments are disclosed. The changes to the Wikipedia page first reported were made by a user who provided the disclosure on Wikipedia. But in point of fact, that is not correct. I'm just one example. They put up there that I was an AIDS denier. And no matter what anyone did, my lawyers showing that from third persons outside of me, that everything they had up there was a lie, and the bias of the people who already had stated that there was lies, because we got on their backboard where they talked to each other, and we got source material to show that they were biased, it didn't matter. So up comes a third party, and they produce a documentary, a multi-award-winning documentary called The Cost of Denial. And they went out and found all these patients, physicians, journalists, who showed that I actually cured 1,200 people of the symptoms of COVID, and 18 of those 1,200 cured them completely, 100%. 10 at the Institute of Applied Biology, 8 at the Gary Knoll Tri-State Healing Center. I mean, the medical records, the lab reports before and after, and then 8 appearances on Tony Brown's show now on PBS. So not only am I not an AIDS denier, I'm the only person to actually prove that I was able to cure all these people, and none of them died. But that was against Anthony Fauci, and that was against some of the groups getting big money from the pharmaceutical company making AZT, Burroughs Wellcome. So they had the dirty politics on their side, and that still cannot be removed. So if people didn't know that, then, you know, they have one opinion, a bias. When people know the truth, they have a different one. How many of you have gone up and downloaded The Cost of Denial and see for yourself? That's how bad Wikipedia is. And they've gone against Robert Kennedy. They've gone against everyone who's progressive and challenges the establishment on any topic. So it's the best mouthpiece the establishment could have. That's why I say walk away from Wikipedia. But people don't walk away. And the vast majority of people don't even understand that.